This week's Sedra is the Sedra of Emor, which has in it the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer. So it would be right to speak about Sfiras HaOmer because it's Parshas HaShavua. It would be right to speak about Sfiras HaOmer because it's Sfiras HaOmer. And since I'm not going to be here, there's something that has to do with the Sedra of Bechukosai, which I'm not going to be here for, so I can sneak that in too. So therefore, I picked the topic I picked, aside from the fact that it is one of my pet topics, and really feel that it's something that people have to hear, and even if you heard it before, hear it again. I guarantee you, you haven't heard it from me more times than I did. So, one of the ideas of Sfiras HaOmer is the idea of aspiration, longing towards higher and higher goals, improvement, perfection, right? Realizing that one is imperfect and needs to be perfected and constantly strives towards more and more perfection when it comes to spiritual things. And the Sefer HaChinuch says that one of the foundations of Sfiras HaOmer is that in order to receive the Torah, the Jewish people had to feel they were missing something and they wanted the Torah. And they had to aspire towards it. And they had to long for it. As a slave who's working in the hot sun longs and aspires for a moment in the cool shade of rest. That's how intense the aspiration had to be. So I want to speak about this. First from a positive side, then from a negative side. Positive side. The truth is that this topic could take us probably about 2 hours. But we don't have 2 hours. So I'm going to have to just give you the highlights, and the main part I'm going to spend more time on. The Medrash says, we've mentioned this Medrash with many different interpretations, but this is the one that Michtav Meliyahu says with a little embellishment of mine. The Medrash says that Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha and his students began to fall asleep. And Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake them up. So he said, what did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 provinces? Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sarah, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 provinces, and they all woke up. What's the connection? The Michtam Eliyahu says the following. Rabbi Akiva surmised that the reason his students were not paying attention is because they felt that Rabbi Akiva was discussing levels way beyond their present level, way beyond them. And they felt there was no purpose to listen. So they might as well get some rest, and when he comes down to their level, they'll be well rested and be able to hear what he has to say. Rabbi Akiva said, you're making a big mistake. Do you know how Sarah was able to reach the level of royalty that she did? Because she, her entire life, longed and aspired to be like Sarah, who didn't just live 127 years, but every second of her 127 years she used for the good. That means she was in total control. She wasn't in control of what came her way, but how she used it and how she related to it. That is the ultimate royalty. So Esther constantly longed and aspired towards that great level. She never reached that level, but at least she reached her own potential. If you don't aspire towards the highest levels, you'll never reach your own potential either. Therefore, it's worth listening to these things to have something to long for, to dream for. That is the idea. My Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Gifter, pointed out, the Gemara says, HaRotza LaHachkim Yadrim. If a person wants to be a Chacham, he should daven a little bit facing towards the south. Because the menorah was in the south, and the menorah is a symbol of wisdom, so the south is a good place to get wisdom. He said, why did the Gemara say it in such a lengthy way? Whoever wants to be wise should daven towards the south. Just tell me, if you daven to the south, you'll be wise. HaYadrim Yachkim. He said, because if you don't want to be wise, you can daven to the south 1,000 times a day, you'll never be wise. It has to start with a desire. You have to have a desire. You have to want something, feel you're missing something. But if you feel smug and fulfilled, and you don't need anything, then nothing you can do will ever help. That is the concept of Sfiras HaOmer, the idea of wanting. However, there's a qualification to that. Right? Wanting and dreaming is all very good, but the story goes, it's not a chazal, it's not a medrash, it's a story, that there was a man who wanted to be a millionaire. And he felt that if he'd be a millionaire, he would use the money for all good things. But he realized that if he worked at his normal job and saved every penny, he wouldn't be a millionaire in 300 years. So that wasn't the way to become a millionaire. So he realized the only way that he could become a millionaire is if he won the lottery. So every day he davened three times a day at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, God, please let me win the lottery. And he begged and he said, look, I promise you, God, I'll give everything, I'll give a good portion to tzedakah and I'll use it properly. And he cried and he begged. This went on for 20 years. At the end of 20 years, the angels came to God and they said, Rabbanu Shalom, we can't take this anymore. Every day we got to listen to this guy beg and cry, let me win the lottery. What would be so terrible if he won the lottery? God said, I'd love him to win the lottery. He never bought a ticket. Right? If you don't buy the ticket, you can't win the lottery. You can have tremendous dreams and want, but if you don't put it into practice, that's why Sfiras HaOmer, we don't count down. When's the Torah going to come? 49, 48, 47. No. Every day we count that day at the beginning of the day. What can I do today that will bring me a little bit closer to the goal? I don't just sit. It says, there's a medrash that says this idea about the lottery ticket. The medrash says the dreams of tzaddikim are both in the heaven and the earth, whereas the dreams of rishayim are neither in the heaven or the earth. The way I understand it is tzaddikim have tremendous dreams. Yaakov Avinu dreamt of a ladder whose head was in the heavens, but its feet was on the ground. You have to have a ladder. You have to have a plan. Today I do this, tomorrow I do that. Right? I want to know Shas. Very nice. You ever start learning? No. But I really want to do it. Right? If you don't start, today a little bit, tomorrow a little bit, you'll never get anywhere. So you have to have a ladder. Today you start a little bit, one rung at a time. You have to have small, short-range goals and long-range goals. But you can't expect to reach your long-range goals without a program, without a ladder. On the other hand, Rishoyim don't dream in the heavens or the earth. Paro dreamt he was standing on the water. All his dreams are wishy-washy. There's no lofty long-range goals and no short-range goals. Everything is on the water. Okay. So that is, in a very, very nutshell way, the positive side of this. The idea of Sfiras HaOmer, if you want to be able to receive the Torah, you have to want it. You have to long for it. And you have to grow slowly. A consistent growth. You have to want to improve. What happens, how bad is it if you don't want to improve? If you find your niche in Yiddishkeit comfortable, and you don't want to know anything more, you don't want to improve, you don't want to improve your Shmiras HaMitzvos, I did it yesterday like this, I'm going to do it tomorrow like that. How bad is that? That's what I call status quo Judaism. How bad is status quo Judaism? Is it bad at all? There's a Rashi in next week's Sedra, the Chukosai, that says the following. In the Chukosai Telechu Sheyihyu Ameilim BaTorah. Torah has to have effort. In 1 second, we'll see what that effort is. If you put effort into Torah, then you will get all the blessings that eventually will lead you to the perfection of this world, to Mashiach. What if you don't put effort into Torah? Then Rashi says you will fall 7 levels. I'm going to say them quickly. I'm going to go over them. So, if you don't put effort into Torah, you're a frum person, but you don't put effort into Torah, you will not learn, you won't do the mitzvahs, you'll be disgusted with people who keep the mitzvahs, you'll hate the rabbis, you will try to stop people from keeping mitzvahs, you'll deny the validity of the mitzvah, and finally, you'll deny God. Now, that's pretty hefty, just for not putting effort into Torah. It doesn't seem very realistic. I mean, I know a lot of people don't put any effort into their Torah. They, you know, glide along and keep status quo Judaism, and they're not people who deny God. They're very nice Shomer Shabbos people. So what are you going to tell me? Wait, next year they're going to be denying God. I know people who've been like that for three generations. So what are you going to tell me? Well, deep down they don't believe in Jesus. I find that hard to accept. So what does it mean? Let me tell you what I think it means. I've said this over thousands of times all over the world. From Israeli Beis Yaakov principals and teachers to the freshest Balei Tshuva you could imagine. And I haven't found an audience yet that can't relate to it in one way or the other. I once said it in Australia when I was there for a Shabbos together with Rabbi Frand. And next thing I knew, somebody told me that Rabbi Frand had quoted me. So he obviously liked the idea, and then I saw he put in his book too in my name. So it's kedai to hear. Okay. And it's kedai for me to hear too. It's kedai for everybody here, because I think everybody can relate to it. Let me tell you what I think it means. First of all, effort in Torah can mean effort in Torah learning. You know, you have a man who puts his feet in ice water and stays up 22 hours learning Torah. That's called amelus batorah. But that's not the only effort you can put into Torah. It applies to every one of us, not just to great Torah scholars and not just to learning Torah. Somebody once told me this world is like a down escalator that you're trying to go up. Children do it all the time. Adults would love to do it, but they hold themselves back. If you try to go up a down escalator, if you stop, you stand still, you go down. If you make some effort, you may stand still. And if you make a great effort, you'll get higher. Putting effort into Torah means improving. Change is something that people resist because it upsets your life. You get used to a certain way, certain standards, and you don't like to change. Change is very uncomfortable. And therefore, the effort that it's talking about is putting in the effort to constantly aspire towards higher and higher goals. I'd like to be a better person. I think I'm a nice person. But I would like to be more careful in Lashon Hara. Okay? I'm not there yet. I'm not happy with the level I'm on. Right? There's a difference between happy and being satisfied. I'm not satisfied with the level I'm on. I'm happy with it. I'm not satisfied with it. I'd like more. That's the way a person has to look. What happens if you don't have that feeling? If you don't have that feeling of a constant ladder of improvement, I don't want to improve. So Rashi describes what happens to such a person. I'm going to explain to you psychologically why. Now let's take the following person as an example. Real story, but that person went on to be a very much of a improving person. But at this point, I want to use this person as an example. Many years ago, when I was first a rabbi in Miami, when I first came to the community, I realized there was a lot of elderly people there, and many of them had never had the opportunity of learning in a yeshiva or a day school. They didn't exist in America there when they were young, or they were Holocaust survivors or whatever, and they didn't have a very rich Jewish education, but they were brought up in frum homes, and they were frum, they were Shomer Shabbos. So I answered the phone on Shabbos, didn't turn on the lights, they didn't drive. But they didn't know too much about the laws of Shabbos. So I decided that for these people, it would be very beneficial to learn the laws of Shabbos, the details of the laws of Shabbos. So between Mincha and Maariv every day, we had about 20 minutes, I would learn with them the laws of Shabbos. One day, we were up to the laws of Borer. Borer is selecting, right, separating the good from the bad, or the bad from the good, for immediate use, with a utensil, without, very, you'll excuse the pun, nitpicking laws. And detailed or whatever. And we were discussing these laws, and somebody fell into the shir. What do I mean, fell into the shir? In the shul at that time, when you walked in the door, you were in the shul, and that's where you get the shir. And he was a distinguished doctor in his early 30s, and somewhat learned person, but never went to yeshiva or whatever. And he fell into this shir, And I hear him listening to all these intricate laws that we're talking about, and his eyes are bulging. And he's a frum, a religious man. So after the shiur, he comes over to me, he says, "Rabbi, are there really people who do all of this?" Now, I was a few months out of the kollel. I didn't think there was anybody who did all of this. So we were like both very surprised. Let's use him as an example. Here's a guy who's religious, Shomer Shabbos, but like, you know, don't confuse me with the details. Right? I'm happy, I don't answer the phone, I don't drive, but Borer, that like is beyond, right? That's, I don't want to know about this thing, I don't want to start doing it, right? Just let me be. So that person doesn't want to change, he doesn't want to improve, because it's uncomfortable. And he wants to be comfortable. There's only one problem. That if you know, you have an inkling that there's something more to do, and you believe in it, and you don't do it, you feel guilty. And guilt is an extremely uncomfortable thing. So therefore, a person wants to not improve, and you just want to feel guilty about it. How do you do that? So the Satan devised 7 defense mechanisms that enable a person not to improve and not to feel guilty about it. And those are what Rashi says, and now I'll describe it to you in great detail. Let's take this guy. Okay, Shomer Shabbos. I was Shomer Shabbos last week without this Borer thing. I'm going to be Shomer Shabbos next week without this. I don't want to know about it. But I don't want to feel guilty. All this is subconscious. It doesn't have to be consciously thought out. First thing you have to do to be able not to improve and not to feel guilty is don't learn. That doesn't mean don't learn anything. Don't learn anything that may smell of the laws of Shabbos, because you may find out about this Borer thing, and the more you know, the more guilty you're going to feel. Ignorance is bliss. So I don't want to know about it. Why? Because then I can fool myself into thinking that Borer really doesn't apply to me. What could Borer do in your, what's it called, in your kitchen? Borer probably applies to farmers, it applies to factories, but not to me in my house. What could be Borer? So I've convinced myself that there's what's it called, nothing to do with Borer, that I would be responsible for. I don't feel guilty in not wanting to implement it. It's just not part of my world, and it doesn't apply to me. Okay, I've convinced myself of that, and I've put it out of my mind. Okay. You don't learn. Inevitably, you're down to the second level. You don't do. You don't know. You're obviously going to do the wrong things. All right, so this guy, one day, passes by a store of interesting contraptions, and he sees the following. He says, "You know, I don't like gefilte fish. I love to eat fish with bones, but it's so difficult to eat the bones on Shabbos, right?" He sees this contraption, a bone plucking machine, right? Hand thing. You put the fish in there, you pull down the lever, and it takes out all the bones. He says, "Wow, this would be great for Shabbos." So he buys it, and he silver plates it, L'Kavod Shabbos, and he inscribes on it, L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. And every Friday night, his wife brings all the fish, they put it into this contraption, he says, L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh, he pushes down a thing, and all the bones come out for the whole Shabbos. He has just transgressed a Torah prohibition. Everything that's wrong is wrong with that. It's a utensil, it's the bad from the good, it's not for immediate use, it's a Torah prohibition. But he doesn't know. Right? He doesn't want to know. So he is now transgressing a Torah prohibition every Friday night, L'Kavod Shabbos Kodesh. Okay. So he's down to the second level. He didn't learn, he doesn't do. And he doesn't feel guilty. Now comes the third level. One day, one Shabbos, his neighbor, who's a little bit more knowledgeable and a little bit more observant, invites him to eat Friday night by him. And he sees, wow, the neighbor also eats fish with bones, not gefilte fish. It's too bad I didn't bring my bone plucker with me. And then they serve the fish. And he sees his neighbor eyeing the fish, looking at it from this angle, another angle, picks up his fork, puts down the fork, and he sees that he's, right, discerning how to eat this fish in the proper way. That means there's something wrong with eating the fish with the bones in the wrong way. I begin to feel guilty, because this guy is making me feel guilty, because I don't care. I just take my bone plucker and take out the bones. Obviously, there's something to do with Shabbos, with eating this fish, and I don't want to know from this. So I begin to feel guilty. In order to allay that guilt feeling that this guy is making me feel, I have to go down to level number 3. Level number 3 is called Moesh Ba'acherim Ha'osim. I'm disgusted with people who keep the mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs, just the ones I don't want to do. I look at my friend and I say, this guy's a fanatic. Right? This is not normal. This is off the wall. Normal people don't study their fish before they eat it. Normal people eat fish. This guy is an idiot. This guy is off the wall. This guy is a kitzoni. Right? He is a shachor. You pick the word, you pick the language. There's a word that describes people who are doing what you don't want to do and demonizes them. Right? He's a chnyok. Right? That's a good word. Hey, this guy's a chnyok. He's a fanatic. Right? It's not normal to study your fish before you eat it. So I don't feel guilty anymore. Because I don't want to be a chnyok. I don't want to be a fanatic. And anybody who does this is fanatic. And therefore, I don't feel guilty. So I'm down to the third level. I'm disgusted with people who keep the things I don't want to keep because it makes me feel guilty. Okay? I go home, get a good night's sleep, wake up in the morning, make a bracha, shalo asani chnyok. I feel great. Go to shul. The rabbi gets up to speak. The rabbi says, you know, I've noticed that we have a lot of very fine Shomer Shabbos people in our kehillah, but many of you don't know the basic laws of Shabbos. So I thought I would dedicate my sermon today to the laws of Borer. Oh, no. Right. Now I'm a captive audience. This rabbi's going to tell me, I don't want to know about Borer. Now, my conscience won't let me say, well, the rabbi's a fanatic. He's my rabbi. So that won't wash with my conscience. So now I have to go down to level number four. Level number four is hate the rabbis. What does that mean? I look at the rabbi and I say, I know what's coming. I don't want to hear this. I don't want to know about Borer. It's to make me feel guilty. Again, subconsciously, I'm saying this to myself. So I look at the rabbi and I said, you know, it's not what the rabbi's going to say. It's not that I don't want to know Torah. I want to know all the Torah, but not from that mouth. That rabbi's not a mensch. 20 years ago, he passed my grandmother in the street and didn't say good morning. He is an animal. And from that mouth, I wouldn't listen to the Aseres HaDibros. It's not what he wants to say. It's who he is. Okay? And what if you didn't have a grandmother? So then you look at the rabbi and you say, that rabbi, he's in it for the money. Look at the car that he drives. Right? From that mouth, I don't want to hear anything. Or, that rabbi's a schlepper. Look at the jalopy he drives. Right? You can always impugn the person, even if you can't impugn what he says. And if you don't want to hear what he says, and if you don't think this is true, I'll tell you a really true mice. When I was in Miami, somebody asked me last night, how come you always tell stories from Miami, nothing from Matityo? I said, Matityo pays my salary. I'll save the stories for Matityo when I retire. Miami, what can I do? In any case, so when I was young, I was a young rabbi then. And many of my balabatim were older than me, and they were accomplished doctors, lawyers, and I was intimidated by many of them that I couldn't confront them if I had to confront them with something. So I had one balabos, a respectable guy, who really didn't like me, which was not unusual. A lot of people don't like me, but rabbis, you know.
It was the rabbi.
Well, yeah, I'm saying, yeah, rabbis, people like, they don't like, sometimes it's justified, sometimes not justified. That's part of the job, okay? But this guy really didn't like me. To the point where I thought to myself, I don't remember murdering his mother and forgetting about it, right? That's how bad it was. And that couldn't have been the reason either, because he didn't like his mother. So that couldn't have been the reason why he didn't like me.
Maybe he didn't.
So I let it go. I felt intimidated to ask him. And it went on. And I let it go until 20 minutes before Ni'il on Yom Kippur. We had a break. I called him over to the side. I said to him, look, I can't go into Ni'ila. I get the feeling that you don't like me in a big way. There must be a reason. And maybe I did something terrible to you. And I would like to ask forgiveness. I just can't remember what I did. If you'll tell me what it was, I would be happy to apologize, and we can make friends and go into Ni'ila friends. He looks me straight in the eye. I could see it like it's happening now. He looks me straight in the eye. He says, Rabbi, I hate your guts. This is just what I had to hear right before Ni'ila Yom Kippur. I said, okay, you got it out of your system. Why? He said, because when you finish your drushes, I feel guilty. I thought to myself, I guess I'm doing my job. But I didn't tell him that. I said, look, nobody asked you to stay in for the drasha. As long as it doesn't look like you're walking out on purpose, go to the bathroom, just stay there, take a walk, whatever. You don't have to, if that's what it makes you feel, it's not necessary to stay in. So we made up, and till Sukkot everything was fine, and by then already something else happened. I don't remember what it was. In any case, people don't like authority figures who make them feel guilty. It's a way of alleviating your guilt feelings, because if I don't like the guy, then I don't have to feel guilty what he says, because I'm not impugning what he says, I'm impugning him. So that's the next fourth level. Soneas hachachomim. Okay. So I tune out the rabbi. I start thinking about something else, because from that mouth I won't listen. I didn't hear the boder things, right? Not from him. So I'm still okay. After shul, a few of my friends are not like me. They really want to improve. And the rabbi's right. So they come to me and they say, you know, we got the chevra together, and the rabbi's right. So we asked him if he would give us a shiur on Wednesday nights about the laws of Shabbos, and we're going to start with boder. Want to join? Oh, no, it's the last thing in the world I want to do is join this year. I don't want to know about this. But how do I go tell my friends I don't want to join this year? Right? These are my chevra. I can't say you're a bunch of fanatics. Now I have to go down to level number five. Level number five is Monea Acheri Milasos. I try to prevent other people from keeping mitzvahs. Not all the mitzvahs, just the ones I don't want to do. Because if they do, am I going to feel guilty? So I tell my friends the following. Oh, wow. You want to learn the laws of Shabbos? You want to start becoming more frum? Kol HaKavod. But let me warn you that this is a step in a very dangerous direction, because it's a slippery slope. You start with one thing, it leads to another thing, it never ends. One chumrah, then another chumrah, and another chumrah. I give you 2 weeks, you'll be taking a shower with a black hat on. Right? No shaila. That's where you're headed. Right? Another 2 weeks, your wives will be wearing their tichel down to here, which is dangerous because they won't be able to breathe. So it's pikuach nefesh. I'm warning you. Right? This is a dangerous step in a dangerous, you're going to start becoming more frum, it never ends. You're going to become fanatics. You're going off the deep end. So this may be very nice, but don't take that step in this fanatic direction. No, I can convince some of my friends, but I can't convince all of them. Some of them are more honest. And they say, no, come on, join the shir. Don't you want to learn what's proper and improve if you have to? No, I don't, so I'm not interested. So now I go down to level number six. That's called kofer b'mitzvahs. I deny the validity of the mitzvah. That doesn't sounds very harsh, yeah? Not so harsh. You know what it means? I say to my friends, if borer would be a halacha, I'd be the first person to join the shir. But you should know, borer is not a halacha. Borer is a chumrah. And in my family, we weren't machmer. So it's not really nogeyata on my family. We weren't machmer. Or, borer is only a minig. We didn't have that minig in our family. Or, borer is only one opinion, and I hold from the other opinion. I don't know who he is, but there's always another opinion. Whoever he is, I'm for him. I reduce the mitzvah into one opinion, a chumrah, a minig, not really my cup of tea. It's not a mitzvah. Be a mitzvah, I'd be there. If it's a halacha, I do it. It's not a halacha. It's a minig. And there are things that are minhagim and chumras, but this isn't one of them. Okay. If you don't think that people say that, even about serious things, another mice in Miami. I once saw one of my balabatim, not one of the people who was Shomer Shabbos, drive his car to shul on Shabbos and park a block away and walk the last block. So I didn't want to embarrass him, so I ignored it. And during the week, I got him alone, and I said to him, you probably think that there's a mitzvah to walk on Shabbos. So you parked a block away from the shul, so you could walk on Shabbos to the shul. But you should know there's a prohibition of driving. So parking a block away doesn't help. He said, no, Rabbi, you understand. My father parked in that spot. My grandfather parked in that spot. It's a minig in our family. We always park in that spot. What can you do? Minig. Okay. So it's only a minig. Borer is only a minig. It's only a chumrah. It's only one opinion. Not really relevant to me, and therefore have fun with your borer class, but we didn't really have that custom. That's very good until somebody brings me a Shulchan Aruch and a Kaf HaChaim and a Mishneh Berurah, Ashkenazim, Sfardim, Rabbi Eider in English, right? It's not Sfardi, it's not Ashkenazi, it's not a minig. right? It's not the modern Orthodox, this super Orthodox. Everybody holds that taking fish bones from a fish with a bone plucker on Shabbos is a Torah prohibition. There's no Shiloh. It's not a minig, it's not a humra, it's not one opinion. Now I'm stuck. Now I have to go down to level number 7. Kofer b'ikr. What does that mean? That sounds really harsh. I deny God. No, it doesn't mean, it means the following. The guy says, no, you're wrong. It's not a humra, it's not a minig, it's not one opinion, it is the halacha. Oh, yeah? Well, you know, I can't do everything. Okay, it's a mitzvah, but what can I do? I have a life, right? And I can't do everything because this just interferes with my life. I can't start with this thing. Now, what does that mean? That means the mitzvah is not an ikkar in my life. I do mitzvahs when they are either comfortable or even sometimes not comfortable, but, you know, they're not the main thing of my life. I have a life. And if the mitzvah is not the main thing of my life, then the mitzvah, the one who gave the mitzvah, is not the main thing of my life. Then I'm kofer be'ikr. I deny that God is an ikr in my life. What am I saying? I let God interfere in my life up to a point. But this is beyond the point. Right? Yeah, up to a point I let God interfere. This is too uncomfortable. I'm not letting him interfere with this. That's kofer be'ikr. People can be 90... Let me tell you what. This is the mitzvah here. I once gave this shiur in a place up north. To Beis Yaakov principals and some teachers, but the most were principals. Chassidim, it's not everybody. And a elderly Beis Yaakov principal, Chassidisha woman, came over to me afterwards. And I was thinking to myself, these people don't want to know what I'm talking about. It's like in a different world. They don't know what people like this are. So I hope that they got the message. I hope that they heard what I was saying at least, you know, and know that such a thing exists. This principal comes over to me. She says, Harav, you were talking to me. I said, talking to you? She said, yeah, I'll tell you why. She said, normally by Hasidim, they don't allow their women to wear wigs, only total head covering. But our Rebbe permits us to wear wigs. We're, one of the Hasidic groups that are allowed to wear wigs. And I wear a wig. My daughter got married recently. And after, the marriage, where I see she's not putting on a wig. So I thought, maybe, you know, it's not comfortable, it's too busy with Sheva Bracha. So I waited, a week went by, no wig. A month went by, still not putting on a wig, she's only wearing a tichel. So I asked her, didn't you get a wig? She said, no, I think that we're going to be a little bit more careful, and I'm not going to wear a wig, I'm only going to cover my hair like this. And my first feeling was, what kind of fanatic is she? What's the purpose of this? Right? Why can't she wear a wig? We all wear wigs. And it bothered me. Why did I think that? Why did I think negatively of her? Why did I think positive? Now you explained it to me. Because I knew that if I had to do that, I wouldn't want to do it. And in order not to feel guilty in the abstract, I had to demonize her. And now I understand why my feelings were like that. It applied to this woman on her level. That means you could be 99% a Haredi Jew. And in the 1% that you don't want to improve, and everybody has something about Yiddishkeit that rubs them the wrong way. Some people have a lot of things. But at least one thing that you don't like, right, that you don't want to improve. I'm happy where I am. I don't want to know more from this. By some people, it's kashrus. By some people, it's Shabbos. Right? We got used to eating these things, no matter what hechsher it has, as long as it has a K somewhere in the name of the product, good enough for me, it's kosher. Right?
Pork.
What?
It's a K in pork.
Right, craft, right. Right, I don't want to...
There's an
okay. Right. I don't want to know from this. Right, or, as other people, it's modesty. Right, this is the way I dressed yesterday, I'm not interested in improving. Some people, it's Shabbos. Some people, it's business ethics. Right? I cheated people last week. I'm cheating them next week. I don't know anything about this. You're not allowed to cheat this one or that one. Right? You're allowed to cheat Goyim. I cheat Goyim. I cheat Jews too, because they're Jews who are basically not frum, and they act like Goyim. You cheat frum Jews? Yeah, who knows if they're really frum. Right? They're also Goyim. So I've convinced myself that it's okay to cheat everybody, And I don't want to know, I don't want to learn from this, I don't want to know that it's, I just want to do what I did last week. And if you have that area that you are not comfortable in wanting to improve, even slowly, you just want to stay where you are, then inevitably you have to be on one of these seven levels, or all of them, because it's natural human psychology, it's human nature, not to want to feel guilty. And these are the ways to alleviate your guilty conscience. So that's why Rashi says that if you don't want to improve, you want to put effort into Torah, you want to just remain status quo, you're inevitably going to go down this down escalator to the bargain basement of Kofar Be'ikar, because these are the seven defense mechanisms that you're going to have to make use of in order not to feel guilty. So it's not only a very positive thing if you want to receive the Torah, to long for it, and to work for it, and to look longingly towards improving, and more towards slow perfection, right? Pursuing perfection. If you don't do that, it's a very, very negative thing that leads a person to very, very negative behavior.